Our Old Testament lesson is from Isaiah chapter 9, verses 2 through 7. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in a pitch dark land, light has dawned. You have made the nation great. You have increased its joy. They rejoiced before you as with joy at the harvest, as those who divide plunder rejoice. As on the day of Midian, that great battle, you've shattered the yoke that burdened them, the staff on their shoulders, and the rod of their oppressor. Because every boot of the thundering warriors and every garment rolled in blood will be burned, fuel for the fire. A child is born to us. A son is given to us, and authority will be on his shoulders. He will be named Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Eternal Father, Prince of Peace. There will be vast authority and endless peace for David's throne and for David's kingdom, establishing and sustaining it with justice and righteousness now and forever. The zeal of the heavenly forces will do this. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. A world whirled and staggered in a night of catastrophic happenings when God spoke, and the eternal word became contemporaneous with temporal men. Except, mostly, no one was aware of anything in particular. Those words are from a poem entitled Hello in Exile by John Harrell. The style of the poetry is sometimes free verse, sometimes metered and rhyming. Only 2,000 copies were ever produced, each one signed and numbered by the poet and by the illustrator. It's a poetic rendition of the story of Christ's birth, written in the 1960s, often with hints of that tumultuous and chaotic time in which it was written. And I believe the poem very much speaks to our own tumultuous and chaotic times. There are signs of light all around us, except that mostly we're often not aware of anything in particular. But with the darkness about our national politics or about what's happening in the world, we may wonder, will our national politics ever get to a place where it doesn't feel like it's always broken? Will the ceasefire in war-ravaged Gaza hold and lead to a more lasting peace? And could that happen also in Sudan, Ukraine, everywhere where there's conflict? There is so much darkness that weighs down on us, that we're constantly being made aware of. But there's also hope. The prophet Isaiah declared that the people who have walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who lived in a pitch dark land, on them light has dawned. And what does Isaiah mean when he says that people were walking in darkness? The English language words dark and darkness can be fraught with difficulties. Too often we equate dark and darkness with bad and light and brightness with good. But when Isaiah says that the people who have walked in darkness have seen a great light, or when the Gospel of John declares that the light shines in the darkness and the darkness did not overcome it, the contrast is not between two different colors or shades of light. The contrast is between confusion and understanding. It's a contrast between paralyzing fear, fear that eats you up from the inside out, and in spite of that, being able to walk in faith and trust. In our time, it seems that we are walking in confusion. Distortions and lies are spread quickly through social media, and the algorithms highlight the most inflammatory content, often causing things to spiral. But there is hope. The poet John Harrell spoke of a sign in the poem I quoted earlier, a whirling, staggering sign promising both disturbance and comfort. It was near at hand, right around the corner, even though most people were not aware of anything in particular. 8 centuries before Christ, King Ahaz was not aware of the sign, but he was very much aware that his kingdom was slipping through his fingers. Ahaz was the king of the southern kingdom of Judah, whose capital was Jerusalem. His kingdom was about to be invaded by the northern kingdom of Israel. Israel had teamed up with nearby Syria. Israel and Syria wanted Ahaz to join with them in an alliance against the Assyrian Empire. Now, confused yet? If Ahaz joined the alliance, it would get Israel and Syria off his back, but it would risk provoking the wrath of the mighty Assyrian Empire and its ruler, Tiglath-Pileser III. It was a dark time for King Ahaz and his people. King Ahaz was very much motivated by fear. So Ahaz struck a deal with the empire. Ahaz was willing for his kingdom to become a vassal state. Political necessity drove him to religious treason. And peace in the Middle East has always been an elusive goal. But Isaiah the prophet, mixing politics and religion, told Ahaz not to put his trust in foreign powers. You don't have to cut a deal with the emperor. All you have to do is put your trust in God. And in chapter 7 of Isaiah, the prophet challenged the king to ask God for a sign. But Ahaz didn't see the need to ask God for a sign because he already had that secret treaty with the Assyrians in his back pocket. But Isaiah would not be put off. Even if King Ahaz didn't ask for a sign, God was going to give Ahaz a sign anyway. And behold, a young woman is pregnant and shall have a son and shall name him Emmanuel, which means God is with us. That's the sign, a young woman having a baby. It happens quite often. No wonder mostly no one was aware of anything in particular. And so in today's text in chapter 9 of Isaiah, we hear those words made famous by Handel's Messiah and by that play about, the herdman children. For unto us a child is born. And in the play, there's a moment of chaos, and the youngest child yells out, "Hey, unto you a child is born." The sign of God signals to us that salvation doesn't come through alliances or secret deals with emperors or military might or politics, but through a God who keeps promises. And as we approach the Christmas season and as we look for signs of God's presence among us, we are reminded of these words from the Gospel of Luke. "And this will be a sign for you. You will find a babe wrapped in swaddling clothes and lying in a manger." For those of the Christian faith, the birth of Christ is the ultimate sign. So when Christians hear those words from Isaiah, "For unto us a child is born," we immediately think of Jesus. In the words of my late friend and mentor, the Reverend Roland Perdue, "No child can ever be the same for us since Jesus was born. The Word became flesh, and it is not for us to make it invisible again." In the eyes of every child, if we look closely enough, we can also see Christ. And the signs are all around us. Find a child today, your own or someone else's. Tell them about your joy on the day they were born, or about the deep love that overflowed on the gotcha day when they joined your family. Tell them about your hopes, dreams, and fears. Tell them stories from your own childhood, or funny and sad, maybe silly stories you remember from theirs. And when you tell them their story, remind them how glad you are that they came into your life, whether through birth or adoption. Tell them that the love in which they were welcomed is still very much present and will always be so. You might also find a child of this church, a child whose baptism you witnessed, and when the pastor asked you, you promised to guide and nurture that child by word and deed and love and prayer, encouraging them to be a faithful member of Christ's church. Talk to that child whether that child is 6 or 60. Talk about your stories of faith. Be willing to engage in honest dialogue. Talk about all the things that you do in the life of this church, how they're connected to your faith. I've told this story before, but I'd like to share it again. I should have saved it for this sermon. But one Sunday when I was serving as a pastor of a church in the Denver suburbs, 2 fourth graders came to worship on their own, having ridden to the church barefoot on their bikes. Their names were Anna and Shyla. And Shyla said that her name was Shyla because she was so shy, which is funny because she so obviously wasn't. Now, the next Sunday, they did come to church wearing shoes, but Anna had her pet mouse in her pocket. Each Sunday, it was pretty much a guarantee that Anna and Shyla would do something surprising, always delightful after the fact. Now, there was a woman in the church named Geraldine Eckroth. She was 90 years old. And I really feared for Geraldine's life that one Sunday when Shyla nearly ran over her with her skateboard in the sanctuary. But Geraldine took everything in stride. She had never had children of her own, but she loved and adored them, and she had taught Sunday school for over 50 years. And even after Shyla had very nearly run her over, Geraldine reminded both Anna and Shyla that they were always welcome to sit with her whenever they came to church. Anna and Shyla were signs of the promise, as is every child. As are you, because you're a child of God. All around you are lights shining in the darkness, some kindness, some prayer, some gesture, some new insight that you discovered or someone shared with you. They're there. Even when the darkness is overwhelming, the lights are there. Morris West, in his novel, The Clowns of God, imagines Jesus speaking about a particular child. And in the novel, Jesus says, "She is necessary for you. She will evoke the kindness that will keep you human. She will remind you every day of who I am and that the smallest dust mote whirled in the smallest space does not fall out of my hand. I have chosen you. This little one is my sign to you. Treasure her." All glory and praise be to our God. Amen.